music to my ears, little Billy?
It happened, Wendy. I told you it would happen. It became Friday automatically. We don't know how it happens. It just happens. Hi, guys. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. As we mentioned, it's Friday. What an incredible array of guests we've assembled for you. From Morton's to celebrate Valentine's Day, tell you about a special they've got going on at Valentine's Day. If you're an incredible romantic and love your seafood, Jeff Powell will be here. Alexander Zelbin to talk TV. Tom Appel to talk about the Chicago Auto Show. And one of our best friends, Mike Toomey, is here with a very special announcement. Mike, how are you?
Will you be my Valentine?
It always takes Mike a little while. He's very shy.
You owe me 50 cents.
I do owe you 50 cents. I know. You said, and we had an engineer in here just seconds ago telling us everything was on par.
I told you, I told you, I told you. I think we can hear Mike, but for some reason I don't think he can hear us.
I can't hear him. Mike, talk way, way, way louder.
I hear Bill now.
There he is.
There we are. I just heard, okay, he switched it.
Mike?
Hey.
Hey, it's you. Hi.
You just scored me 50 cents because I knew this wouldn't go smoothly.
Are we live on the air right now?
Yes, we are.
Man, I was just listening to NPR, and all of a sudden it was you guys.
Oh, are we? Are Wendy and I are now on NPR? We'll talk quietly.
Yes,
we are
very quiet.
We'll talk much quieter.
We're talking with Bill Leff, the gentleman who collects toys. Well, that's an interesting hobby.
Mike, you have to realize something. They're in our basement here at WGN Radio. There's a team of operators from the 1950s, and whenever a call has to go through, they take a cord and they take it out of one hole, they put it in another, just like they used to do way back in the 1950s.
One ringy dingy.
Sure. Sometimes they say one ringy dingy.
What is that character's name? That
little Ernestine.
Ernestine.
Man, that was a great character.
Yeah. Speaking of characters, yes. How's that for a transition,
yes.
Mike?
Good.
You have a giant announcement to make. Sit down, everybody. If you're standing up, please sit down. Mike, go ahead.
I am performing my one-person show, TV and Me, at Pheasant Run Main Stage Theater in St. Charles. One show tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, and hope you can be there.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, there was a time where the show would have been referred to as a one-man show, but you have upped your game. It's now a one-person show.
I am a person,
Good
Bill.
For you. We're all just people.
Yes.
That's all
I've
we are.
I've been upgraded to person.
Congratulations. Second of all...
Do you really have to say that now?
Yes, you have to say one-person show. There are no more one-man shows. Second of all, this is such good news for anybody who's never seen TV and Me. It's one of the best nights of theater, one of the best one-person shows you'll ever imagine. If you've already seen it, go see it again. I've seen it four times. I laugh harder every single time I see it.
Thank you.
So good.
What do you have on Bill Leff, Mike? Because every time
Nothing.
Someone's around, when you're nowhere in listening shot, he will say, funniest guy ever, Mike Toomey.
That's nice. I have some pictures I'm looking at my phone right now that, you know, they're not entirely flattering, but
right.
I've seen worse.
Yeah.
That's a cute
yeah.
little cape.
Thank you. Nice to notice.
You know what? I'll tell you what. There, you might if you come to my show tomorrow, you might see a picture of me with a cute little.
Oh,
guy.
How's
because,
that for a nice
so.
Bonus?
Because this show is me, like talking about all the television that I grew up with and what I was doing when I was watching it, what I was thinking. And there is a picture of me with a Batman mask on, and it's a towel. It's like a blue and white striped towel that I used in.
But when you were a kid, even though it was just a blue and white striped towel. It wasn't. It was Batman's cape, wasn't it?
That definitely was the cape. And in fact, you would know this better than anybody, Bill. Action figures offer so many varieties of Batman. There probably is a Batman with a towel as a cape available to you.
Towel cape Batman? Very rare, but a fun add to anybody's collection.
Yeah, I mean, when do they run out of Batman, you know, different ways to present him in a figure? Here's Batman with an apron, and he's cooking a barbecue.
Right. What's the one show, Mike, if you could go back and be put into any show from your illustrious career of TV watching that you would like to be in, you'd like to be a character on that TV show?
Well, the aforementioned Batman. God, and back then, every celebrity who was anybody wanted to be, you know, a Batman villain.
Sure.
You know, to be. And if they didn't use one of the comic book ones, they would make them up. That was what I loved. They would just invent, like Egghead. Vincent Price as Egghead wasn't a Batman. They just made that up
right.
for the show, you know.
Right.
And if you remember, his hook was using the word egg instead of where it was EX, he would turn into EG. Like, oh, this is excellent. Oh, this is exquisite.
This is my egg wife.
Yes.
Ex-wife.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one.
That wouldn't come up, but that could have worked.
I'm no longer married to.
But the casting choices were odd because if they were appealing to children, with all due respect to the great Vincent Price, kids didn't clamor to see Vincent Price or Burgess Meredith.
More so than probably like Shelley Winters or Roddy McDowall.
You know,
I mean, Frank Sinatra wanted to be the Joker.
Right.
And when it came down to talking about the role, he was not available for it. But, you know, how can you beat Cesar Romero as the Joker?
The best.
I mean, really, like, here's what I loved about Cesar Romero as the Joker. He spoke to Batman and Robin. And, you know, you and I were watching this. We're like 9 years old, 8 years old. He spoke to Batman and Robin the same way we would. Like, he'd make fun of him. He's like, well, if it isn't the boy Blunder and Fat Man.
But if you're a cunning criminal in Gotham City, you know that that's what's going to hurt Batman and Robin the most, is taunting them with names.
You go for the feelings right away.
Yes.
You know, you're not going to overpower them. You go for the feelings. Oh, look at Stupid Man and Dumb Boy.
And he refused. The best part of Cesar Romero playing the Joker is he flat out refused to shave his mustache.
Refused. Like, how important is a mustache? I mean, how much white makeup in the world is there that you can take on to cover a mustache to be the Joker? And also, when they make the toys,
yeah,
they actually have a faint mustache under.
Yes, they do.
Really?
Yes, they do. To totally, completely replicate Cesar Romero's version of the Joker.
The true Joker.
Yeah.
All right, more with Mike Toomey in just a little bit. His one-man, his one-person show, what am I talking about? His one-person show is going to happen this weekend. It's in St. Charles, the Main Stage Theater at Pheasant Run, a very nice venue. If you've not seen TV and Me, you need to go see it. Tickets are available right now at pheasantrun.com/entertainment/mainstage theater. Do yourself a favor, go see TV and Me. We'll be back in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Did I say that with confidence?
That was fantastic. If you have plans for tomorrow night, change them. Mike Toomey has his show, his one-person show, TV and Me, in St. Charles, the Main Stage Theater at Pheasant Run. It's 8 o'clock start. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's hysterically funny. Mike, did you know back when you were a kid that one day all those moments, or hours, I should say, of watching television would one day pay off in a show like this?
No, but I had hoped, you know. I used to watch them, and, you know, like we did as kids, you'd imitate those characters, and sometimes it got a little weird in the house, but I honestly would, you know, if I found a pair of glasses, you know, I'd say, okay, now I'm Floyd from Andy, because I have glasses on, you know. Hey, is that Floyd over there? Ooh, what time is dinner? Ooh, hey, Goober stopped by. Ooh, hello, hey, Goober.
He always seemed like he might doze off, didn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially towards the end there. Goober, Howard Spring is over here.
Mike, it was a standard back in the 60s when we were growing up watching TV that a lot of shows used the one-parent premise. Or the kids were adopted by a surrogate, by a family member. I guess the best one would be Brian Keith as Uncle Bill, right?
Boy, on Family Affair. You must have read my mind, because that to me was the best one ever of all that. Because it's not nuclear family. It's not mom, dad, blah, blah. And the best part to me, the real wild card on that show was Mr. French, you know, Sebastian Cabot.
He was great.
He was great. And so many of us didn't even know who he was until that show. But he really had a lot going on before that. You knew his voice. He narrated all the Winnie the Pooh stuff.
Sure.
You know, by the time they'd gotten to page 37, Pooh was a bad of very little brain and decided to go to Piglet's house. Well, on this day, Pooh, who seldom wears pants, began to feel a chill and wait, what am I reading? I'm off script.
Oh, my God, that is dead on. You are so good.
Do you think Buffy and Jody asked Mr. French to read him Winnie the Pooh stories in that voice? Because that would have paid off big.
Yeah, and he charged him also.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Jody, let's see how much you have in your drawer. Well, I'm afraid 77 cents isn't going to do it. Perhaps Sissy can chip in and make it round it up to a dollar.
Why was Uncle Bill, who's a very successful businessman...
Uncle Bill.
Why was he always so upset, Mike? What was going on with Uncle Bill? Always so upset.
I just found him to be... He spent however many seasons that show was on just rubbing his eyes the whole time. Like Uncle Bill, at any moment, hadn't slept for 72 hours. And they'd be like, Uncle Bill, are you my friend? Yeah, Buffy, we're friends. Let's get out of here and let Uncle Bill take a nap. Ugh. The whole time.
Has TV changed dramatically, Mike? I mean, all the shows that we've talked about that you do in TV and Me hold such special places in our heart. Will our kids be able to say the same about the TV shows they're watching?
I think they will. It's just more widely spread. I mean, the stuff we watched, everybody watched because you had four channels.
Right.
You know, now there's so many options. But, yeah, I think it's... certainly changed a lot.
How many characters do you do in TV and Me, would you say? I know it's a rough estimate, but how many?
I'm going to say like maybe 60, something like that.
Good golly.
Uh-huh.
Somewhere in that range for that.
Pretty good.
Wow.
But some of them might just be like a line or two, because when I first started writing the show, you know, I'd have this long bit for this show or this character, and you know, you do it and it's not, maybe there's one line of it that's funny. So towards the end, we squeeze a lot of those together, you know, like I'm a big fan of Raymond Burr as Perry Mason. I always wanted to make a big bit out of that, and it just, it was funny for like one line, you know, to have him be like, isn't it true that you murdered your brother-in-law with a spatula? And isn't it true that potato salad spoils in the sun? You know, but you couldn't build like 20 minutes around
that. No, that's
so many isn't it true stuff you can do.
That's too hard. Is there one voice or character that you love doing in TV and Me, but it's just, sadly, it's too obscure? The audience doesn't know who it is, but you would love to do it anyway.
There were some that ended up on the cutting room floor. Like, I used to love to do Jack Klugman as Quincy, the medical examiner. That's not part of the show anymore. But what I used to love about him is how he would just, no matter what it was, he would just go off. You know, he would start out talking very slowly, you know. Only a husband knew about your parakeet's allergic reaction to amoxicillin, the very same medicine that your predator son has been on for an ear infection for the last 10 days. No, it wasn't an accident. It was murder, and your husband killed your bird. Wait, what? Why? I don't even care that much.
But a testament to Klugman, when he would do Quincy, I wasn't seeing Oscar Madison. I was seeing a whole new man, weren't you?
No, you're right about that. And I touch on that in the show, too. That guy that you just don't really get on board with in the second role. Like William Shatner is T.J. Hooker, you know.
Yes.
Buddy Ebsen is Barnaby Jones.
Yes.
You know, you just couldn't do it. You like the guy, but you know, Andy Griffith is Matlock. You just wanted him to be Sheriff Taylor, you
right.
know. He's like, I'm out of order. You're out of order. Why this whole court is out of order.
Wouldn't you say that our own WGN played a large role in your growing up, because we were lucky enough to have the Andy Griffith Show and Dick Van Dyke on every night, Monday through Friday, and that made a big difference, didn't it?
Right, always. And you caught up so quickly, because it was a daily thing. You know, 240 episodes of the Andy Griffith Show. Probably seen them all, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
I can't believe that's all there were.
Right. It seems like there's hundreds and hundreds more.
Yeah, 8 seasons. I mean, they did a lot more shows per season, too.
Yeah.
And then when the show got in color, you could really see, not just in watching the show, you could see a difference in Andy, because that's when Don Knotts left the show.
Yeah.
And Andy just like... He signed on for three. They talked him into signing on for 3 more years, and you could tell now when you watch the color ones, he doesn't want to be there.
Well, he started out as such a country bumpkin on the Andy Griffith Show, and then got more wise as the show went on, which I guess that's good for a character to change. But
he got more wise in general, because he realized the show wasn't going to work with him being the funny. He had Don Knotts. He had all these. You know, Andy Griffith was an extremely successful, funny comedian. But on this show, he was straight man to an entire town of nut jobs.
Yep.
The Didn't center Goober of the help, universe. Though?
Well, Jack Burns helped, and Goober helped, and Floyd, of course, helped. They brought in all those guys to surround him.
Yep.
Which was smart.
Two characters on that show that didn't last more than a season, because after they had done several episodes, they just kind of went, this isn't working. One was Jack Burns.
Yeah.
You know, that's
what
a tough,
was he? What
job.
Was his?
He
was
a deputy. Barney. He was the deputy that came in to replace Barney. And early, Eleanor Donahue had just come off Father Knows Best.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Miscast as Andy's, you know, love interest. And she kind of went to the people who made the show and said, nah, this isn't.
Can I ask a quick request of you?
Sure.
This is one of my favorite voices that you do. Uh-huh. From my three sons, Charlie O'Casey, whose job it was to watch the boys. But again, like TV, he was always in a bad mood back in the 60s for some reason.
Right. Like he couldn't wait for Fred McMurray to get home so he could complain.
Right. He had a lot on his plate, you guys.
He did. No,
the three
did.
Boys.
He did.
And Fred McMurray, well, how are things over the weekend, Charlie?
Steve, I don't know what's going on with these kids around here. Tramp threw up on the carpet and Chip came home drunk.
Uncle Charlie.
And Steve. That's in a good mood. That's Charlie in a good mood.
Right.
All right. You got to go see it tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. It's Mike Toomey's one-person show, TV and Me. Honestly, four times out. I've enjoyed it every time. I enjoy it every time I see it. It gets better and better and better. It's at the Main Stage Theater at Pheasant Run Resort in St. Charles. You want to go to pheasantrun.com/entertainment/Main Stage Theater. Go see it. You'll love it. Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Absolutely. Always fun talking to the two of you.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Very, very nice.
Right back at you.
Right back at you.
The 60 of you. Is this a Valentine's Day song?
Yes.
Would you play this
very
for
romantic.
Your betrothed?
Yes.
Betrothed?
I would and I have. And I will continue to.
All right. Valentine's Day is right around the corner. It was a week from yesterday, so we're under a week. Six days away.
V minus six.
Very good. And a couple of ideas for your significant other is flowers, candy, but I think steak and lobster is the way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Morton's has a special for Valentine's Day from February 9th through the 16th, so it's going on right now. General Manager of Morton's, The Steakhouse, Jeff Powell joins us. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
All right. I was asking you off the air. I was trying to look up and see if lobster is an aphrodisiac. Has it been known to be an aphrodisiac? That's not what you said off the air.
Off the air, I think I said it might have worked for me.
Yes. Yeah, those are your words. Yes.
But to me, I think that's pretty romantic. Going out for a lobster dinner, this is an 8-ounce filet. When cooked properly, that Morton's does it. It's juicy and delicious.
Absolutely. We think it's the best steak anywhere.
It's pretty great. I was also telling you off the air, when my two boys got their braces off, they wanted steak because the orthodontist always says do not eat steak when you have braces. So both times that they got their braces off, we went to Morton's in Naperville. We have a lovely picture of us in a booth. And really, you do things right there.
Well, we try. We try to do, you know, that's why we have over 70 locations worldwide. So, you know, we think we are the best steak anywhere. So we've truly, and we've with our legendary service, it's a can't miss.
Talk about that combination. Why does that combination work so well, your lobster and your steak? What's going on there taste bud wise?
I think you got the best of both worlds. You know, they both literally can just melt in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very little seasoning. And then the lobster sitting on top there, and you know, with a couple of asparagus spears, it is an aphrodisiac.
You could substitute cottage fries for the asparagus, right? If you're averse to vegetables,
why would you put cottage
just
fries?
Just in case. Oh, cottage! You can't beat cottage fries, Wendy. So they're good with everything. They work with everything.
You could get it on the side, but the presentation looks
right.
pretty
presentation
beautiful
better.
On the spears.
Yeah.
For you, Bill, we'll do anything you'd
like. Thank you. You're very, very kind. You've been with this company, with Morton's, for 16 years, 17
yeah.
years, 16
yep.
years?
No, this is my 16th year.
Is there a difference between the Morton's around the country as opposed to Chicago, or are they all kind of uniform?
No, they're, you know, we try to be consistent, and that's one of the things that helped build our brand, you know, worldwide, is the consistency that somebody can dine in Chicago and then be in Vegas next week and mm-hmm. then be in Miami the
but
following.
But they started here, right?
Originally, yeah. 1050 North State Street.
Yeah.
In fact, our original general manager just retired after 40 years.
Wow.
But, you know, you see how many steakhouses there are now, you know, just in this little radius here. We've
right.
over 40 steakhouses, and, you know, we claim to be the leader, and, you know, we were there originally.
Is it a friendly rivalry or a bitter feud between the steakhouse owners?
I think so. There's my sales manager is a president of what we call the steakhouse group, where they meet monthly and, you know, share ideas and best practices and whatnot. So I think it's we've developed a very good camaraderie with all the, you know, with all the steakhouses.
I would share bad ideas so that they'll take the bad ideas and then you'll
That's
look
how
better.
You roll.
Yeah. Yeah. Very competitive.
Jeff, how come when I make steaks on the grill, they're nowhere near restaurant quality and they're good?
But they're not as good.
No, and it's the cut of meat,
missing?
Isn't it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it probably depends where you're getting your meat from. You know, we use Allen Brothers, which is Chicago, you know,
yeah.
Chicago-based company here. Obviously, we use prime beef, you know, which is about 2% of the meat out there. So
only 2% is prime.
Correct.
And who decides what is and what is not prime? The governing council?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. USDA.
Yeah. USDA does. Yeah.
You know, you have that tramp stamp that says USDA Prime. Yes,
I'll show it to you when we're done. It wasn't easy to get, and it was painful, but it was worth it.
Well, you're the top 2%. So.
Thank you for saying that. You always hear about aged beef. Does that make a difference, and how do you know exactly how long to age your beef?
Dry or wet, too.
Yeah, those are great questions. At Morns, we're wet-aged. You know, I prefer... been eating wet aged for so long. The dry age has a little more gamier, maybe taste.
Is it?
Smell.
Yeah.
Our beef comes in aged about, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. You know, and we at Allen Brothers, you know, they hand cut them for us as well.
Yeah. So.
All right, hand cut. That's an interesting thing. Big fan of the ribeye because I like the marbling. There's a little more fat in it. A strip steak is good too. Typically, I don't order a fillet because, like I said, maybe I'm preparing it wrong, but it's not as tasty to me. But if prepared correctly, that's the best cut of meat, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I'm it happens every night. You know, people ask my opinion, hey, what's the best steak on the menu? And I always defer to, like you said, we have a bone-in ribeye. We call it Chicago-style ribeye, you know, 20 to 22 ounces. And also the New York steak is one of my favorite steaks as well. So
the best because why? What's going on? Is it just the flavor of it? Is it the presence? Is it everything?
Yeah, just like Wendy said, it's the flavoring, the marbling.
Yeah.
It just gives that nice, rich, you know, you can't go wrong.
And with the bone in, that gives it more seasoning, and you can feel like a caveman at the end of your dinner and pick up the bone and gnaw it.
Oh, nah. And then make paintings of buffalo on the walls. That's fun. That's a good way to end the evening.
Or go out and get a little stamp.
Yes, you could do that. There's so many options. Yeah. It's perfect. I want to remind everybody that before we say goodbye to you in just a little bit, we're going to give away a gift card to Morton's, correct?
Correct.
Oh, very, very nice.
We have a $50 gift card. Jeff Powell, general manager of Morton's The Steakhouse, brought in for us. Want to focus a little bit more on this Valentine's Day special. It is an 8-ounce filet, which is a pretty big filet. And on top of it, Maine lobster, a béarnaise sauce, only $59. It seems expensive, but look at what you're getting, and this is a special occasion.
And it's Valentine's Day.
Correct. Yeah. And if you're working or... your significant other isn't around on Valentine's Day, you know, we're running that special from Saturday from the 9th through the 16th. So, you know, with it falling on a Thursday, we hope to be, you know, we have plenty of availability, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So please come on in and, you know, say hello to me. I'll be there.
All right, perfect. Aphrodisiacs, foods that are considered aphrodisiacs are those that aim to stimulate the love senses, sight, smell, taste, and touch. I think
so. Lobster for sure.
Steak for sure.
Steak for sure. Pop tarts probably. That'd be up there. Jeff, on Valentine's Day, I like to dress like Cupid, and I have a little bow and arrow. I like to run around. My wife loves it. I won't be turned away from Morton's if I dress that way, will I?
No, I might have you go table side.
So many locations of Morton's, the Steakhouse, of course, State Street, Wacker Place, Northbrook, Rosemont, Schaumburg, Naperville. And Morton's, the Steakhouse, founded in 1978.
Correct.
Been serving steaks ever since.
1221.
I know they're national. Are they international? Do you have Morton's in other countries now?
Yeah, in fact, we just opened one recently within the last couple months in Tokyo.
Wow.
We're prominent in China.
Yeah.
We have Toronto.
So the Wagyu beef, do you serve any of that? And if not, I mean...
We serve American form of Wagyu beef.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
From Snake River Farms in Idaho. Wagyu beef is Japanese beef. The theory is, or the... sentiment is that, you know, they massage the cows and the beef is, you know, it's really, you talk about butter now, that's
tender.
Really
I like a little bit of bite though to my steak. You know what I mean? Although then again, you have a good filet where it melts in your mouth. I think there is enough variety of steaks to go around.
Absolutely. I think with the quality steaks that we serve that I think you'll be more than
you'll find something.
Exactly.
How much time elapses between the massaging and the served at the table? You got a little bit of time in between,
yeah,
I think.
So.
All right, good. That's all I need to know. I'm just curious. I don't want my food just freshly massaged. I like a little time to pass between.
A little downtime.
Yeah, some downtime.
Yeah, perfect.
And then do I get a massage as I'm enjoying the beef, or how does that play out?
You might have to right after that, right?
We went to, isn't there a Morton's right near Disneyland?
To Anaheim.
Yeah, we went to
Did you go there right before Disney?
Yeah. It was after. It was before we started the whole Disney thing, because we, like, oh, we made it. Let's go have a great night out.
Yeah.
Really good wines. Just a perfect restaurant.
And that's awesome. And, you know, it's, we're a brand, and we're a name brand, and we're in, you know, obviously all the major cities, so that's, that's great to hear.
And the atmosphere in there is always great. I mean, the food is exceptional, but the atmosphere is always great. So you're doing something right over there at Morton's, no question. Let's give away a gift card.
All right. Jeff Powell, general manager of Morton's The Steakhouse, has come in. You can go to Morton's.com, by the way. Still time to make reservations for Valentine's Day. But from the 9th through the 16th, you can enjoy a succulent... I love that word.
Yep.
8-ounce filet topped
yesterday
with...
those were plants and flowers, Wendy.
Oh,
and today
yeah.
we're referring to steaks and lobsters.
Look
as
at that. We are running
There's a
gamut.
Theme. There's a running theme.
So it's an 8-ounce filet, and it's Oscar style. And typically, that's crab meat, but this time, this is lobster sitting right on top of it with a Bernays sauce.
Correct.
Asparagus spears.
How would Abe Vigoda say that, Wendy?
Bernays.
Oh, I love that impression.
all for just $59. Jeff will never come back. You know?
No, that's the last time for Jeff. That's all right.
Still time to make reservations. So many locations, just go to Mortons.com, and a $50 gift card can be yours. What number, caller?
Caller 14.
Oh,
it's the February 14th celebration. Caller 14 right now, 312-981-7200. Scores that great Morton's gift card. Call now.
And Jeff, Morton's is not just for Valentine's Day, but a lovely little special you guys have going on.
Absolutely. And it's great for, like you said, if you want to have your braces off, you have a birthday celebration, anniversary, what have you.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
Nice
Thank
to
you.
See you. Call now. Win that gift card from Morton's. Back
what number did you say?
Caller 14.
Oh, that's right.
312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. A lot coming up on the show. Alexander Zeldin will join us in just a little bit. We'll talk about TV. And then our friend Tom Appel, fresh from the Chicago Auto Show.
Christine from Roselle is going to Morton's, the Steakhouse. Any one of her selections, a $50 gift card. And go ahead and check out their Valentine's Day special from Feb 9th through the 16th, an 8-ounce filet, succulent Maine lobster and Bernays sauce with asparagus spears, maybe.
On the side, if you want them.
Cottage fries.
I would get cottage fries.
I like their hash browns.
Those are delicious. Those are so good. Wendy, two deaths of note. Very sad in both cases. Baseball great Frank Robinson. An incredible baseball player for many teams, most notably the Baltimore Orioles. Later, he would become the first African-American manager in Major League Baseball with the Cleveland Indians. He passed away. And then the great actor, the great British actor Albert Finney, we found out this morning, has also died at the age of 82.
What's the first role you think of with Albert Finney?
Well, I have...
Of course you have more than most
movies.
People. Oh,
that if you like Albert Finney, you need... You need to see all four of these movies. Is there one for you that
Annie?
Annie was great. Annie was really
good. That's memorable.
Daddy Warbucks. Yeah, he was.
I'm not saying it's his best. I'm saying that's the first thing I thought of.
Let me throw some movies at you that you may or may not have seen. First off, in the number four spot, Shoot the Moon with Diane Keaton, where they are.
I've never seen that. I'm going to write that down.
They're a divorced couple with four young daughters, and it just shows the impact of how their divorce affects the family, what they do. He gets a girlfriend, Karen Allen. She gets a boyfriend, Peter Weller. And it just shows how the family is split up in their allegiance to either the father or the mother. Great, 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 great movie.
I will watch
Alan Parker
that.
Directed movie. Then there's a movie called Big Fish, which is a relationship movie, a dying father and his son.
He was awesome in that.
So good in that.
That is an awesome, and I saw that because of you. You recommended
Did I recommend
it.
That?
It's really
it's
good.
A heart tugger. Really a beautiful movie. My next one is Murder on the Orient Express. This is the original version, not the one that was out last year, which was a good movie, but Albert Finney plays Hercule Poirot in that, the Belgian detective, and everyone in the movie is good. It's got an incredible cast, but Albert Finney just absolutely shines. If you've seen him in other work, you know how good he can be, but he's just unrecognizable. He's just so
Never
good.
Never saw it.
And then, you got to see it. It's really good.
All right.
It's really good. And then I think his best work of all time is in a movie, kind of an obscure movie with Audrey Hepburn called Two for the Road, which kind of changed the game in terms of telling a story in a straight narrative. A lot of times in TV shows and movies now, you see time go back and forth. You see characters when they're young, and then they're old, and then they're young, and then they're younger. That wasn't a thing back in the 60s, but when they made this movie, that's the device they used to tell the story about a man and a woman taking a road trip. They show them when they're younger, then when they're older. It's kind of out of
all
sync.
All during that road trip?
Yeah.
That's
they're remembering
cool.
stories from their past. They're having some marital difficulties, so they're trying to determine where exactly.
Is that the common theme in most of his movies?
In almost every movie he was in, somebody's having marital difficulties, yes. I don't know why, but that popped up a lot. But an incredibly versatile actor. I never, ever saw him in a movie where he wasn't great. People always know him from Aaron Brockovich. I think he was nominated for an Academy Award. For Tom Jones.
Didn't win, though,
he
I heard Dean
never
say this
won.
Morning. That's tragic.
Nominated a bunch of times. And, you know, he'd only made two movies in the last 9 or 10 years. He was getting older, and I guess he had had an illness for a while, and that kept him off. But, boy, what a great actor. So a sad loss to find out that Albert Finney had died.
What was the fantastical sort of movie he made with the... I think Ewan McGregor was in it.
That's Big Fish, Steve.
Did you mention that?
Tim Burton's movie, right? Yeah. Yeah, that is one of the best movies ever.
I love that movie. I don't think it got great reviews, but I really like that movie.
You know, it got decent reviews. It's hard to pigeonhole that movie. It's hard to describe exactly what you're going to see with this movie, Big Fish. That's why I would just leave it as a relationship story with a father and a son. But, there's plenty of opportunities if you're anywhere near a chance to see him in these movies. Go see him.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you'd brought it up.
Oh, that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. That's right.
So we all cried during that movie?
Oh, yeah.
It was
absolutely
so good.
Yeah. No question about it.
Oh, please see Big Fish.
Yeah.
Maybe not on Valentine's Day weekend, but...
No, wait until... Right. Very good call. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's a lot more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Oh, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Steve, thanks so much. It's time to talk some television with Alexander Zeltman. Alex is the managing editor of Decider.com, a great entertainment website. Alex, we missed you last week. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing? I missed you, too.
Well, we missed you because we know that there's huge news about the show The Masked Singer, and we couldn't wait to find out what this news is. Can you please tell us the Masked Singer news?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of Masked Singer news going on.
Wendy and I are moving to the edges of our seats. Hold on. Okay, we're good.
Is this getting any ratings?
Yes.
It is doing extremely well. This is one of the big breakout hits of the TV season. It seemed like my feeling on it was, I thought it was going to be, people watched the first episode, thought it was ridiculous because you have these mass celebrities dancing around and singing in insane costumes, and then they would tune out after that. But it's only built from there. It's the most social show every Wednesday evening. It's people are talking about it. People are excited about it. They figured out the mysteries of who the masked singers are. It's doing great. Fox picked it up for a second season. The stars are an interesting mix. We've gotten Tori Spelling. Ricky Lake, spoiler, was unmasked as the Raven in the last episode.
Yeah.
But there's still a bunch more to go. We had one of our reporters, Kayla Cobb, was actually out in California and talked to some of the producers about stuff. It sounds like they're considering making some changes in season two. It's possible the
will
Korean
they make it
format
entertaining next season? Will it be fun to watch? Is that what?
God, I hope so.
That'd be great.
Have you seen
one
it,
of the
Bill?
Things they are?
No,
because it's entertaining, isn't it? To some extent, in a like car accident kind of way.
Is it, Alex? Would you say?
Well, I would say the performances are kind of great, just because these costumes are so insane, and seeing somebody dancing around in a 6-foot-tall monster costume to some song, that's great. The panel, to be frank, and no insult to my good friend Robin Thicke, is terrible.
Yeah,
it's they make the most insane guesses. They're absolutely not true. Their comments break in the middle of the song. It's just not very good. But
didn't Ken Jeong at one point think one of the singers was his dad?
Who?
Ken Jeong. You know who he is?
No.
From the Hangover movies.
Oh.
Yeah. He guessed that it was his dad at one point. I saw a clip of that.
Their guesses are absolutely awful. I will say, Joel McHale was on the show a couple of times, and he basically sat there and made fun of the show and how terrible it was. That was fantastic. So Caitlin, our reporter, actually found out that they are considering having more guest judges like Joel McHale show up because they've been enjoying them so much. Kenan Thompson, I believe, is going to be showing up later on, and it feels like that's going to be a similar thing.
Yeah. I may watch it.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Alex, they may also change it up a little bit to have more singers sing for less time. So we'll see what happens.
Doesn't it kind of look like a show that we would see that's being done in another part of the world that we would watch and we go, well, that would never fly in America. We're too smart for something that silly. But here it is in America, and it's doing really, really well. So what do we know?
Well, it was based, just very briefly, it was based on a Korean format.
Oh,
but
is it?
The difference with that, yeah, they had different singers every episode versus having them going on the entire time. So it's a very different show. The Korean show, I believe, is called King of the Masked Singer. But yeah, that's what they're basing it on. That's why it looks like that.
Go on, Wendy. What were you
going to say? I want to bring this up because if you haven't seen it, and I want your opinion on it, there is a new documentary on Netflix, which I saw everybody talking about, so I had to watch it, Abducted in Plain Sight. It's horrifying. It's cringeworthy, but it's really fascinating to me. Have you seen this?
I haven't seen it, but we've been talking about it quite a bit around the office because it is one of those things that, you have to see it to believe it. I don't really want to spoil any of the twists in it, at least as far as I've heard of them. But it also was made a while ago, and it was aiming for a theatrical release. It kind of ended up on Netflix. It wasn't a big Netflix release. It was just going to drop there, but it's really building up steam because the story is absolutely so insane.
It's 90 minutes, Abducted in Plain Sight. Look for it. It's about an abduction of a young girl. I don't want to say anything.
It's worth saying.
It is, but it's not pretty. I'll just tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's been talking about it on Facebook, and I got to be honest with you, that sucked me into it. It's like, what is this? I got to watch it. It's an interesting watch.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Tons of tips, by the way. Oh, go on, Alex. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that it is the sort of story, even though it is a documentary, you're going to watch it and say, this can't possibly be real.
I know.
But it
really
is absolutely real.
Oh.
It's real.
I like the sound of that.
Bizarre things involving this particular family.
Yeah.
And it is bizarre.
Give the name one more time. Abduction in Plain Sight?
Abducted in Plain Sight.
All right. On Netflix.
Yes.
A lot of texts from listeners who enjoy and in some cases love The Masked Singer, one after another after another. Here's one, though, that says, that is the dumbest show ever, and my husband watches it. Sheesh, with a lot of E's in the middle. finally, The Walking Dead is returning to AMC this weekend, Sunday night.
Woo!
Yeah. Yeah, 9 p.m. on AMC. Now, I will mention on the streaming end, if you subscribe to AMC's Premiere service, you're actually able to watch it a week early. So it's been sitting up there for about a week. Surprisingly, not a lot of spoilers out there, so good job on AMC Premiere subscribers. But when we pick up, we're going to get the next introduction of the next biggest villains on The Walking Dead. They were teased towards the end of the mid-season finale. They're called the Whisperers, and they're so creepy. They are humans who have skinned zombies and then wander around in zombie skin like zombies. But I've seen the first couple of episodes back without getting into spoilers. It's pretty terrifying because you're very used to having watched the show, these zombies just kind of walking around, and suddenly the zombie pulls out a knife and starts moving quickly and attacking our heroes. It's pretty scary in a way that the show has not been scary for a very long time.
Oh, good.
And our heroes used to rub zombie juice on themselves so they could basically, in a nutshell.
By Tropicana.
So they could, you know, penetrate the masses and get through so the zombies wouldn't, the walkers wouldn't notice them. This takes it totally to the next level and really something that is so unexpected. I cannot wait to see this. They delved into it a little bit on the last episode, the finale.
Yeah, what you're going to see, though, going forward is these people may, again, without getting into spoilers, but if you read the comics, you know what's coming. They may have some leaders, and the leaders are pretty cutthroat in terms of what they do. So don't expect the dead part to go out of Walking Dead anytime soon.
So that's Walking Dead's half-season premiere this Sunday at 9 o'clock on AMC. And I think we get, do we get six episodes this time around, Alex? Does that sound about right?
Another eight.
Oh,
I
eight
could
episodes?
Be wrong. Usually they split it about eight and eight or so.
Okay, good, good. Looking forward to
Can
it.
Can I ask a really silly question of you, Alex? Bill and I were talking off the air about This Is Us, and it returns next week. And I watched all the ones I recorded, and I thought I was up to date, but yet they showed some previews, and you and I both thought maybe we missed one.
Right.
I don't think there was a random one in there. One of the things that may have happened is because of the State of the Union address, because that got moved to February 5th, the This Is Us schedule got pushed apart a little bit. There were two episodes in January, if you did miss those. There was one on January 15th and January 22nd, but the one that was supposed to go on February 5th got pushed off to, I think, February 12th.
Oh.
So aside from going in your house and checking out your DVR, that's got to be right down to the schedule so
but
far.
But maybe they ran the preview thinking that that February 1
that
aired. Yeah, because I was baffled.
Yeah.
And Bill and I like to stay on top of some of this stuff, and I was shocked. So thank you for clearing that up.
Everything's back to normal.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. More with Alexander Zelbin, the managing editor of Decider.com, in just a little bit. You're listening to Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're talking television with Alexander Zelbin from Decider.com.
Stupid prepositions.
I know. Sorry about that.
Hate him.
Can I just say, abducted in plain sight, somebody texted, and this is why people are so screwed up watching a show like that. It is screwed up. That's not why. That's not going to make me screwed up.
No, you have different reasons
right.
for but being
I mean,
screwed up.
Exactly.
Right.
But I mean, it's just amazing what's out there. If anything, there's a message that needs to be shed after that, like shared rather. And has Murphy Brown been renewed? Is another text we got.
I don't think it has been renewed as of yet. We're still waiting on that. For those who are waiting at this point, I think you're probably going to find out in May when upfronts for the networks happen. That's when they announce their new schedules. So it may be a little while before we find out the fate of Murphy Brown.
Do you know about either of these shows? One texter wants to know about Life in Pieces over at CBS. That usually comes on late in the season, so any minute now, I would think, right?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure when it's coming on. I know it's been renewed for a fourth season.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when it's going to come on, but maybe it'll be next fall.
Really well-written show. Very, very funny show, Life in Pieces.
Really?
Is it like
30-something, kind of?
No, it's nothing like 30-something. It's a sitcom. I would say mostly like Modern Family of any show on TV right now, but darker.
All right.
There's a lot of
I will binge watch
darkness
that.
To it. And the other one, Alex, help us out with this one. This is from a texter who wants to know about a return for the show Peaky Blinders on Netflix.
Oh, I think that one is done. I'll double check for you, but I believe that wrapped up at this point.
Can you give us a synopsis for those of us who've never watched it? Because I've heard nothing but good things about this Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders, it's a gangster epic. It's a gangster family drama. Cillian Murphy, isn't it? I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
You probably recognize from a bunch of different... Yeah. But I'm pretty sure it's done at this point. There's a fifth series on BBC One, but I think that's it. Oh, you know what? I'm totally wrong. I just looked it up. It looks like there's actually going to be another three series, seven in total. So expect more soon. Everything I said up until this point.
That's good news for what you just did. You took a person and made them very, very sad, and then in the end made them happy. Congratulations on that.
Trying to be is a roller coaster. It always is.
There's so many shows to keep track of.
There's too many shows. One Day at a Time. Now, this is not the old version, the Norman Lear version from the 70s. Mm-hmm. This is the new version. I think they're already on their third season, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. It all just hit on Netflix today. A bunch of our critics here, as well as critics all over the place, love this show. But I will say our critic here, Brett White, is maybe the number one fan of the show. He wrote a piece that was posted on DeciderCut.com today that I'll read the headline for you. One Day at a Time Season 3 proves it's the most important show in Netflix history.
Wow.
So there you go. He's seen all of Season 3.
Can you say why? Say, are you able to say why, or do we need to read to know?
Well, if you've ever watched the show, you know it's about a family. It's like a warm blanket of a show. It's comforting. It takes on issues at the same time. It actually tries things format-wise. There is an episode that I know he responded to, and I believe a couple of other people I've seen popping up online responded to, that deals with anxiety in a very real and very serious way, in a way that I don't think any other sitcom has before. Hmm. People have definitely been responding to that in a big way. If you're not looking to chill out, by the way, on the weekend for a comedy that's all about anxiety, I will say there's also some fantastic cameos in this season. Stephanie Beatrice from Brooklyn Nine-Nine shows up, as well as Melissa Fumero. I think Gloria Estefan shows up at one point. So it's a lot of fun in between all of the really powerful episodes.
I also want to mention the Fyre Festival documentaries. I watched both of those, the Netflix one first. Thought that one was a little bit better. The Hulu version as well, made by different people, some involved in the whole hoopla. But very interesting and definitely worth watching. And that guy, Billy, is such a scumbag.
Oh.
That's all I got to say.
Oh, Wendy. What if his mom's listening?
I'm sorry. This kid was, he was a kid. He was in his early 20s making promises that there was no way he could keep.
Right. It's an interesting story.
It is pretty
Very
good.
Interesting.
You liked that, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the whole Fyre Festival thing is absolutely insane. For those that don't know, it was supposed to be this model-filled, crazy, biggest party of all time, and instead there were limp cheese sandwiches and tents and horrible weather and huge disaster. A funny thing that I don't know if you guys know, I'm not going to repeat the story on air because it's a little lewd, but there's a story
in
the Netflix doc. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just saying, I mean, there's a kind of lewd story that happens in the Netflix documentary with an event coordinator who is told to perform a certain act in exchange for water. The crazy news off of that, people respond to it so well that that guy is actually getting a reality series off of it.
Seriously?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's how fast things happen. We don't have a whole lot of time, Alex. We only have a little bit of time, but I'm so curious. We saw a notice that somebody's thinking about doing a reboot of Lost. Do you know anything about that?
Mm. This is something they've been talking about for a really long time. It came out of TCA. The new head of ABC was asked about rebooting Lost, and she said, I think that would be a really interesting idea. It's certainly something we think about. But they've been talking about that since the end. Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, who are the producers on the original Lost, said, we know at some point this is so popular that they're going to reboot the show.
Yeah.
So they've been very aware that that's going to happen at some point. There's no plans to do it. There's nothing in the works. There's no showrunner, nothing like that. It's just something that's always going to be talked about and maybe will happen at some point in the future.
TV keeps looking for the new version of Lost, like a show that's like Lost. Mm-hmm. So why not go back to the source material and just be Lost?
Yeah. Personally, Lost is my favorite TV show of all time, so I never want them to remake it. But, yeah, they're going to do it eventually. They'll do it with a new cast, and I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yep. Decider.com is the website. Alexander Zalbin is his name. He's the managing editor. Go visit it right now. It's fun to listen to. It's fun to read, Decider.com. Alex, thanks for being here. We'll talk to you in a week.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks so much, guys.
Have a good weekend. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy, right here on WGN.
I love talking cars.
You are just going to be in heaven. Tom Appel is here, automotive expert, writer for Consumer Guide Automotive, where he's the publisher, actually. And at some point during this interview, I bet he uses the word Prenindle. I bet he does.
You just threw that word out to us.
I did.
And it's a car part, the Prenindle.
The Prenindle.
Right. Most most people would know it from Green Acres.
Right. That's why I know it.
Yeah.
If it's been used since or before, I don't know that.
All right. What the hell is it? I heard you say it and you guys giggled a lot. And yeah. What is it?
All right. It's Oliver, right? It was Oliver Douglas.
Yeah.
On Green Acres, Oliver was teaching Lisa to drive. Mm-hmm. And the Prenindle, the P-R-N-D-L, right above the automatic shifter, she called the Prenindle. So she was pronouncing.
Yep.
Yeah. It's fabulous.
Park, reverse, drive, neutral.
Yeah.
So that's a reference for
what's
the kids.
What's L? Oh, low gear.
Low gear.
I'm looking up Prenindle. I could not find it.
That's
I didn't
what it
get
is.
It. You guys are that's terrible. Right.
So which car at the car show at McCormick Place has the best Prenindle this year, would you say?
Wow.
That's a tough one.
The Dodge, the Ram 1500 pickup has a round Prenindle now.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's rotary.
We've come a long way.
Yeah, we have.
Is an unusual way. I know in the old days you used to grab it behind the steering column. Then it moved to down low.
Mm-hmm.
This is now like you're turning on a burner on a stove. Do you get used to that?
Really fast.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so I wouldn't like it either.
You wouldn't like it because why? Because it takes away part of the thrill of driving? Is that why?
I think because I'm a cranky old guy who's used to... That's just used to things.
Right, maybe that has something to do with it.
But I got used to it pretty quickly.
Yeah. All right, so the big show at McCormick Place starts officially tomorrow, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you've already been in on previews.
Yeah. 2 days of fun already.
Yeah. What wowed you? What did you see that you just couldn't believe you saw?
Wow. What? There's a lot of big news at the show this year, more, I think, than in recent years. But one of my favorite things, and it's got nothing to do with being especially new, was a color.
A new color
for cars.
Yeah, Nissan just launched an off-roady version of its popular Pathfinder called the Rock Creek, and the color is Midnight Pine. It's killing me. I love it.
So a darkish green?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
and
really
I'd like to see that back. Dark green's had its moments, and it looks like it's having another moment.
Why would that color have gone away? What I mean, I know there's trends and things become popular and less popular, but dark green, you would say there's always going to be a market for that.
You would think so, and I don't know. The automotive, I've had someone in design tell me that automotive color trends tend to trail fashion by about 5 years, and then the cycle takes a really long time because to get an automotive color in place,
yeah.
There's a lot of things you have to coordinate because parts are built at different places, and it takes a while to set all that up. So if a designer wants to do a color on a car right now, it might be 2, 3, 4 years before
really?
It actually hits. Yeah.
We had that taxi cab yellow, an AMC, not a Pacer. We had
Gremlin.
No, the mid, the Hornet.
Oh,
we had the Hornet with the wood paneling.
Oh, that's
it was very
nice
popular.
Car.
But that yellow was very popular in the 70s. It went away, and I'm seeing it a lot again.
Yeah, you had the yellow. You had the ochre. The lime
it was
green.
No
AMC did all those crazy colors.
I liked the lime green, but this was like taxi cab yellow with the the wood grained.
Yeah.
Contact paper.
Oh. So when a company brings back a color like this green, this darkish green, do other companies watch it and say, let's see if it's a hit and then we'll do the same?
Yeah,
or how
do they really?
They do, don't they?
Yeah, if you remember the early 90s when Ford was selling about 1 billion Explorers monthly, they were the first to do like dark green at the time, and then everyone did it.
Mm. A Ford LTD, that's what I remember being that dark green.
Ford LTD?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why I remember that. It's just, like, really dark.
I always think of LTDs as dark red or white or black because they're usually cop cars.
Oh, yeah.
But they were usually cop cars, yeah.
Well, this was a civilian who owned it.
Okay.
One of the cars my parents had, the color was called Candy Apple Red, and I remember because the salesperson kept stressing it over and over and over. He just loved saying Candy Apple Red.
Yeah, that was a hot rod color.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that any manufacturer doing hot Candy Apple Red is doing something near real Candy Apple Red. The actual hot rod color usually takes a lot of work.
Oh, I would think.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
What's your favorite color in a car? I just want to ask you two.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Jaguar's dark green. And if you go back to like the 80s, a Jaguar XJ6 dark green, that's a perfect thing.
Bill?
More often than not, silver, but it depends on the car. Some cars don't lend themselves to silver, but there are certain cars that just look so good in silver, like a silver metallic.
I do not like a blue car.
No?
I like earth tones. I like taupe. or like a graphite color, and that after having a completely white car and a complete black car, those are the worst to keep clean.
Oh, blue is getting kind of hip now, but it's that bright blue.
I don't know.
Like a sky blue almost?
Yeah, kind of a sky blue. Subaru's doing it. Toyota's doing it. It's on the Toyota Tacoma right now.
Yeah.
It looks great on that truck.
Yeah. So you've seen this, right? There are certain vehicles that just look right on certain colors.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, I always want to ask you this question, and now it just popped up. I've noticed in commercial advertising, more times than not now, when a company is selling cars, they have all the cars in their commercial one color. They're all black, they're all white, they're all red. It used to be they would show you a variety of colors, but now they're very uniform. What happened there? Why did that change?
That's an interesting point. And one of the things that happens when you see a new car is like when the media sees it.
Yeah.
There's a launch color.
Yeah.
And they really stick to that color.
Yeah.
I remember, for example, the Mitsubishi Eclipse. This is maybe 15 years ago, 12 years ago. When they relaunched that vehicle, it came out in this bronze, kind of a golden bronze color.
I remember
color.
That.
Good-looking color. Looked great on that car.
Yeah.
The only press photography, the only test cars we ever got were that color. It was really a controlled launch. And I'm not entirely sure
that's strange.
Why they wanted to do that with that much control. But
that's so strange.
Do you think there's any way it's all one color just so you can really eyeball the difference?
Between the different models,
yeah, because that's what I can tell in a commercial or a print ad or online. If they're all white or something or all black, you can tell the difference, how it looks a little bit. If they're all different colors, you get a different view of it.
True, and you might also get a sense that there's more different versions of the vehicle than they are.
Oh, yeah.
Confusing matters, maybe.
So true. Tom Appel is here. We'll talk about the auto show. It's at McCormick Place starting tomorrow night. We'll tell you about all the things he saw and you will see by going there. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Tom Appel is here, automotive expert and publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's on Twitter, Car Guy Tom. But there's,
Car Guy Tom.
But there's some things in there. There's
underscores.
There's some underscores.
Yeah.
Car_Guy_Tom. That's how you can find him on Twitter. All right, so you were wowed by a new color at the automotive show, but what about from an innovation standpoint? What's going on with cars now that they didn't used to do?
Here's an interesting thing. Plug-in hybrids are sort of sneaking into people's lineups. And one of the most interesting, the new Lincoln Aviator, which is coming out soon. This is going to be a Lincoln version of the Ford Explorer. Really good looking.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a plug-in hybrid version, and they're not calling it plug-in or hybrid. It's simply Grand Touring. So they've kind of removed the stigma, if there is one, to the green technology.
Yeah.
Also, it's going to be geared more towards a performance hybrid, so it's going to do more to enhance performance than improve fuel economy, but it'll still help.
Because it's a Lincoln, could Matthew McConaughey take this car to a friend's house and shoot some pool with them spying on him from the next room?
I believe he could, and then take notes in a little notebook.
Yes.
Nice drawings.
That would be excellent.
All right, you mentioned that. A cool new thing for that brand. Is Matthew McConaughey really helping?
I have no idea.
I mean, honestly, Bill, would you buy...
Confuses me.
I just don't get it.
He already signed up for more, so it must be working.
Yeah. All right. What do we know? Give us some trends. What are you seeing a lot of companies doing?
An interesting trend, and I think this lends itself to something Wendy just said during the commercial break, is to make crossovers look a little bit more trucky.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you mentioned all the chrome on the front of the Highlander, for example. But another thing that's happening, like Toyota just launched a new RAV4, and that looks a little bit more off-roady and manly. Plus, they've just added a TRD Pro, which is an off-road thing that Toyota does.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been an off-road version of the RAV4 before, so that's interesting. Honda just added the Passport to its lineup, which is a car that now slots between the CR-V compact and the Pilot, which is their midsize car. They have the Passport in the middle, and they've decided to market that as an off-roadish vehicle. So it's got a little bit less overhang on the front and back for rock climbing, a little bit elevated ride height. It's an interesting strategy.
Is every company looking towards some sort of an electric version of their cars?
Yes.
Every one of them?
Yeah, everyone's going to have to do it. It's going to be a really weird hurry up and wait period.
Yeah.
You don't want to be left out. You want stockholders to think you're ready for this, but I'm not sure the public is quite ready.
Tesla's prices keep dropping a little bit, though, right?
They just announced a price cut on the Model 3, which is the...
Just the Model 3?
Everything came down, I think, $3,000.
Oh.
This was a reaction to the fact that they've lost their tax credit.
Yeah.
So the tax credit went down to $3,750. So this pretty much covers the difference for now.
Yeah.
They've lowered the price on the Model 3 a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes.
All right, here's an innovation that impresses me, but I don't know if it affects anybody else. I've seen a couple cars now do a thing where the mood lighting inside the car can be adjusted.
Yeah.
You can pick between 5 or 6 different colors so that you're, not only your dashboard, but all the side lights and everything all become either blue or violet or white. What's that all about? I like it.
Yeah, ambient lighting is a really interesting part of a lot of luxury vehicles.
Really? You like it?
Yeah.
What, are you having a disco in your car?
Denny Terry and I, we drive to work together every day, and I let him pick the color. It's fun.
That is a Pernindle old reference.
Wendy, Google Denny Terrio quick.
Shut up. All know who he is.
Consumer Guide recently had a BMW 7 Series through the office that had extremely variable mood lighting.
Really?
They don't call it mood lighting. They call it ambient lighting.
Ambient lighting. That's
yeah, cool. And at night, it's really interesting. And I think the blue is probably the most effective.
Yeah.
So it's hidden. It's recessed lighting.
Yeah.
It just casts a very light color on the whole car. And our guy Damon played around with it for a little while. We have an article up if people want to check out the light.
I would imagine it would feel, especially at night, like you're in a totally different car. Just all you're really getting is a different colored light throughout, but that's all it would take.
Yeah.
You know?
It's strangely satisfying, and I can't say why.
I don't know why either. But I saw it, and I go, I want that, but I'm not even in the market for a car. Wendy is in the market for a car.
I am, and I really should check out the auto show, because really, where else can you go look around at a bunch of different things? I've test-driven a couple of cars. I'm noticing that the cockpit is much like a cockpit now. I feel claustrophobic in some of these new cars that I've been driving. It's too cramped.
That is a big battle for designers and engineers, because they want you to feel comfortable and protected, but they also want to keep the space there. So it depends on the car, how low you sit relative to the console in the center of the car,
how
low you are relative to the glass line on the outside.
And a lot of these cars, like the back window, we had a rental car somewhere, I don't remember what it was, but the kids were sitting in the back, and they could barely see out the window.
Yeah,
it's like deep.
It's getting harder. The glass area on a car has gone up, and as part of this is because we're all driving crossovers now. But back in the old day, you could kick back and put your arm out the window. You can't do that anymore. The window's too high.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they also have to keep safety and concern as part of all that redesign, don't they?
And part of that happened when side impact laws went into effect, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a question not about the car show, but about the weather we've been having, especially last week when it was so cold.
Yeah.
Not that long ago, 2/3 of our cars wouldn't start under those conditions, but almost everybody I know, I only know one person who couldn't start their car in the morning last week on the coldest of days. What are they doing differently that all of a sudden the engines are more dependable?
That's a good question.
That
I think
is.
Maybe the batteries just got better.
Is that what it is?
The other thing is everything's fuel injected these days. So 10, 15 years ago, if it got really cold, there's still a couple of carbureted cars out there.
Yeah,
and you were hosed.
Yeah.
But not so much now.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking our old Toyota, our 2007 Corolla, we had just gotten a new battery maybe a couple months ago, so I'm sure that had something to do with why it started.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one I was worried about not starting.
Although, now here's a twist to that. In the older days, you put your key in and you turned it in the ignition, and now a lot of us, I'm lucky enough, I've got that push button start. Does that change the game at all?
It changes it so much. Yeah. I don't know how much it helps it actually start, but we no longer pump a gas pedal.
Right.
And we no longer crank the key.
Right.
You press the button, you just wait for it to start. So the car's probably doing a little bit better job of timing that stuff than we would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had an issue with my tires on the coldest day when it was 40 degrees below. I got in the car and there was an immediate message on my board saying that all four of my tires were underinflated. You're supposed to be at 36.
It depends on the car, but that's about right, yeah.
I was at 27 and 28, so I had to fill it really quickly. But then listeners to the show said, no, the car will take care of itself. Don't put air in. You'll have to get the air out later. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really tough call, and from a safety position, it's hard to really say what to do. But I wager half the people in Chicago saw that light.
Yeah, I bet.
That Thursday morning. And the deal is that, your inflation, the tire inflation has been reduced, the pressure reduced with the cold.
Yeah.
But it's going to come back up when it warms
up. It fixes itself somehow.
Sort of, yeah. Now, you are driving around in slightly underinflated tires.
Yeah.
But presumably in that weather with the snow and everything, we were all probably driving pretty safely anyway.
I was the only one on the road anyway that day.
There you go.
There was nobody near me. Yeah. So it's a car-by-car basis as to whether or not you should refill it because your board tells you to.
And my light didn't come on that morning.
Yours didn't? No?
Surprisingly.
My test car did. My wife's did. A couple guys at the office.
Yeah.
Maybe we have too much air in our tires right now. And also with that push button start, it just happened to me yesterday. I was running to do a quick thing into Walgreens, and I was clicking my lock button and noticed I didn't hear a noise, and I left the stupid car on. I forget to turn it off sometimes.
Yeah, I did that once.
Oh.
Left a Corvette on all day. Not running.
And unlocked.
But the ignition was on.
Oh, no, this was running and on. And I almost went into the store. I just noticed that, wow, it's not making that little click noise. It won't lock if it's running, which I find surprising. Shouldn't it still lock?
The really interesting thing about that, and I think generally it works pretty well with the keyless entry thing and the push button start, but you can run into a thing with some cars where you'll turn the car off, but the center console light or the infotainment screen stays on.
Mm-hmm. For about a minute.
It stays on after you lock the car for another 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So if you're not thinking about it or you just think you're forgetful, you'll just sit there and you can't leave because you're not sure if you turned off your car.
That's a mess.
Yeah.
What can I do to help myself remember to turn the car off? I'm not kidding.
Post-it notes? I don't know.
Because it is a complete change since you don't even really need your key. You can leave your key in your pocket.
Put a post-it note on your forehead.
On my forehead?
Yeah. People will be asking you, what does that say on your forehead? I turned my car off. Oh, that's what I forgot to do.
All right, I'll do that.
Great to see you. Overall, what's your review of the car show? People should go.
The show was great. Real quick. 1,000 cars, 1,000,000 square feet, open on President's Day as well.
So, wow.
Yeah, if the kids are available. Also, if you download the app, they're cutting you a deal on one of the tickets.
Yeah. So, oh, very nice.
Yeah.
That's Tom Appel.
He is the Consumer Guide Automotive Publisher. He's an automotive expert. And like we said, you can see him on Twitter, car_guy_Tom. It's easy to do.
Thank you, Tom.
Read his article on Pepperendals.
No, what's it called?
Pernindle.
Pernindle.
Yeah.
You guys suck.
Yeah, we do.
That's all I got to tell you.
All right, more after this.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung. He is in our Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.